Is outcome better if we use mechanical thrombectomy? Do they have signs and symptoms of a large vessel occlusion? Should we really be giving TPA to this patient? We're the ones who make the difference in outcome. Who are we doing this for, and how are we going to choose our patients? We've proven time and again that we're really bad at it.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. And welcome to this month's podcast. This month, we're going to talk about acute ischemic stroke. And in looking back over our episodes, it's actually been a few years since we've talked about acute ischemic stroke. And as many of you know, there's some recent trials, some recent updates to our either emergency medicine or neurointensive care unit treatment of patients with acute ischemic stroke. So it's time for an update on this critically ill patient population. And to bring us up to speed, to bring us up to the latest and greatest evidence-based management of patients with acute ischemic stroke, I have none other than neuro-EM critical care guru, Dr. Evie Marcolini, joining us here on the podcast. Evie, welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine.
Hi, Mike.
It's so great to have you back. Now, it's been a little while since we've had you on the podcast, and you're doing a lot of great things. Can you bring everybody up to speed on what's new in your life?
Yes, I have great news. In the past few months, I've finished moving from Connecticut to Burlington, Vermont, where I'm working at the University of Vermont College of Medicine. And clinically, I'm working half my time in the emergency medicine world and half my time in neuro ICU. It's a great opportunity because we're building a brand new emergency medicine residency program. And I would tell people to look out for us starting interviews this fall and starting our first class next year. So it's going to be a great program and a lot of new people joining the faculty here. And there's a lot of excitement about that. We're also developing a dedicated neuro ICU, which is also very exciting because the hospital here in Burlington has a very large catchment area and a lot of stroke patients and neurocritical care patients need a lot of help, and we're happy to be building that neuro ICU. I'm going to be the fellowship director for that program. So if anybody is interested in a neuro ICU or neurocritical care fellowship in the future, please contact me, and I look forward to all these developments. It's very exciting.
That is wonderful. That is so exciting in terms of opportunities. Congrats on the move and look forward to all those developments. And you're also doing a fair amount with the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I'm a board member at AAEM and very busy traveling around the country talking to residency programs about what AAEM stands for and what we do. I'm also the co-chair for the scientific assembly that we put on every year. This is my third year as co-chair, and happy to say that next year our conference will be in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we're really looking forward to a great conference.
Absolutely. AAEM Scientific Assembly is definitely one of the highlights of the year for emergency medicine in terms of conferences, just an outstanding educational experience. Now, having said that, I've had the privilege of lecturing with you at a lot of things throughout the year, and you are widely considered one of emergency medicine's leading neurocritical care experts. And no better person to really, as I said at the beginning, bring us up to speed, give us an update on acute ischemic stroke. So perhaps if you could give us kind of a high-level background of where we're starting a few years ago. It's maybe perhaps not simply just TPA, not simply are we in the 3 or 4.5 hour window. And then bring us up to speed over the last few years of what the literature shows and what we should be thinking about for these folks.
Oh, I'd love to. I think neurotopics for emergency physicians is becoming quite an important topic, and we need to stay on top of this data and on top of what's happening because we're the ones who make the difference in outcome for these patients. So let's talk about that. Getting beyond TPA. Finally, we're getting beyond TPA. I'm happy to say that. Although TPA is still in the picture, we have new advanced techniques,
specifically mechanical thrombectomy or endovascular clot retrieval.
And as recently as 2013, there were three studies that were published in the New England Journal that said mechanical thrombectomy versus medical management, which is essentially TPA for qualifying patients, did not improve outcome. And that was pretty important because we had up till then been doing mechanical thrombectomy. Patients who came into the ED had stroke symptoms and either got TPA or didn't get TPA, were offered mechanical thrombectomy. And it was very satisfying to see some of the outcomes when the interventionalist would get the clot out of the artery. So that was very satisfying. And there was sort of a ground level belief that this was valuable and this was useful. However, we had not quantified it. And the three studies that were published in 2013 showing no improvement in outcome were just frustrating, because if there was no available evidence showing that outcome is improved, then these procedures probably wouldn't be approved by FDA and then they wouldn't be funded. So we started to see what might look like the demise of mechanical thrombectomy. However, soon after that, in 2015, we had multiple trials started off by the Mr. Clean trial, which showed that there was improvement in outcome with mechanical thrombectomy. What Mr. Clean did was open their books halfway through the trial to see what the outcome was, and they showed that it was so much better that they actually stopped the trial. After they stopped their trial, four more trials, which were doing essentially the same thing, and broadly speaking, it was looking at mechanical thrombectomy versus medical management, which essentially is TPA, and asking the question, is outcome better if we use mechanical thrombectomy? All four of those trials stopped as well because they showed much better outcomes with the intervention. This was a big deal because now we had another tool. And some would ask, well, how is it that the three studies in 2013 didn't show improved outcome, and then all of a sudden in 2015 we have improved outcome? And the answer to that is multifold. One is Mr. Clean was done in the Netherlands, where you didn't have patients opting out. So for instance, in this country, in the United States, if you came in 2013 and you got TPA and it didn't work and you were offered enrollment into a trial, you'd say, sure, I'd love to be enrolled in a trial for mechanical thrombectomy. And then when you randomized to the non-treatment arm, you'd say, wait a minute, there's an option, I want that. And we were losing a lot of enrollment to that. So in the Netherlands, when they did the Mr. Clean, if you enrolled in the trial, you had to stay in that arm. And if you were getting mechanical thrombectomy, you had to be enrolled in a trial. That's one of the reasons. The second reason is they used the stent retriever, which is a new technology and a better technology over the initial retrievers, which were the Mercy and the Penumbra. So stent retrievers have shown to be much more effective in getting the clot out and improving outcome. So that's what happened in 2015, and our guidelines were changed. The guidelines said that if you showed up in the emergency department with signs of stroke, that effectively, I'm speaking very broadly, signs of stroke, then you should be offered mechanical thrombectomy if you showed up within 6 hours. So that was a big deal. And we have been operating under those guidelines up until recently with the DAWN and DIFFUSE 3 trials. And just to go through a little bit of the detail in those two trials, DAWN looked at patients who had large vessel occlusion that were seen in 6 to 24 hours from the time they were last seen normal. That's a big change. Now we're going beyond that 4.5 hour window for TPA. We're going beyond the 6 hours for mechanical thrombectomy. And they included patients who had ICA or proximal MCA clot. And they compared the clinical deficit severity, which is measured by the NIH stroke scale, versus the infarct volume, which was measured either by DWI through MRI or CT perfusion. So when they took those patients and said, is the outcome better if we use mechanical thrombectomy versus just medical management, they found that there was a better outcome. There's a couple of limitations of this study. One is it's funded by the company that makes one of the stent retrievers, and those stent retrievers were exclusively used in the trial. And the other was that they used a scale called the utility-weighted modified Rankin scale. Now, when you look at stroke trials, the modified Rankin scale is pretty much the standard of measuring outcomes. But what they did was said, let's look at the modified Rankin scale and ask, what is the real utility, or how do people view the scores on that scale, which goes from 0 to 6? And they gave them intermediate scores. They further separated those scores into what's really important to people's everyday life. And they came up with a scale of 0 to 10. So essentially, what they're saying is the modified Rankin was too blunt of a tool, and so they made a more refined tool. Now, that takes it out of the perspective of most other scales and most other studies looking at stroke. So some would argue that that's a limitation. But they did find an improvement in that score for mechanical thrombectomy versus medical management. And that was a big deal. But after that was the DIFFUSE 3 trial, which also similarly looked at these patients. In the DIFFUSE trial, DIFFUSE 3, they were looking at large vessel occlusion patients that presented 6 to 16 hours from last time seen normal. They also looked at ICA, proximal MCA, and those were viewed by a CT angio or by MR angio. And they were comparing patients with a core infarct of less than 70 cc's and an ischemic to core ratio of at least 1.8 or greater and a penumbra of at least 15 cc's. So what they used was something called rapid software in the CT perfusion or in the MR imaging. They said in order to qualify, these patients have to have a core infarct of at least 70 cc's. And when comparing that core to the penumbra, which is the tissue at risk but not dead yet, that the penumbra had to be at least 1.8 times bigger than the core. And the reason for this is if you have a significant amount of penumbra to rescue, that will balance off the risk of the core bleeding from reperfusion. So what they showed was an improved outcome. They showed 14% mortality versus 26% when they used mechanical thrombectomy. And the differences from the DIFFUSE 3 to the DAWN are really in the time from last seen normal. So DIFFUSE was 6 to 16 hours. DAWN was 6 to 24 hours. And in DIFFUSE, it was not industry sponsored or funded, and they were allowed to use any device they wanted to, or they could use angioplasty or stenting. So both of these trials really brought us into a new era. And that era I would most broadly describe as we're not so much looking at time is brain, and we're looking more at tissue is brain. So we're using our advanced imaging techniques to look at the tissue and to say how much of the brain is already infarcted, how big is that area, and how much of it is at risk, is ischemic, that we can salvage. Because as we have known since the initial NINDS trial, the big fear for us in emergency medicine is if we give TPA, we may cause a bleed. And also with reperfusion through mechanical thrombectomy, we can cause a bleed if the core infarct is big enough. The risk increases with the size of the infarct. But now with this advanced level imaging, we can see what we're looking at as far as tissue, infarct, penumbra, etc., and we can make a better assessment and we can judge better whether or not the procedure is likely to benefit the patient.
So let me pause there, Evie. You've gone through a tremendous amount of information, really, really brought us up to speed with some great perspective coming from just beyond TPA as you started off and now with these latest DAWN and DIFFUSE 3 trials. And I'm going to bet that almost all of our listeners out there, their stroke protocols at their individual institutions are in a state of flux. And as is ours, we at the University of Maryland, we are a comprehensive stroke center designation. And our neurocritical care and our interventional colleagues have certainly jumped on board, and we are evolving our stroke protocol. And with this, let me ask you a few important questions. And let's even begin before the patient's actually in the ED and perhaps in the pre-hospital setting. I guess Is there a way to identify patients who may have a large vessel occlusion and that may benefit from mechanical thrombectomy? And having said that, what about the evolution of EMS protocols and perhaps even bypassing certain facilities to go to more comprehensive centers that do have this capability?
That's a great question because it really brings it down to who are we doing this for and how are we going to choose our patients and how are we going to get the patients to the best place possible without just sending everybody to your comprehensive stroke center. And EMS is challenged in that most EMS systems are using a stroke scale that's abbreviated, that has good sensitivity, but really the specificity is not as good as we would want it to be for looking for a large vessel occlusion. Our stroke scale has been a 4-point stroke scale. For instance, most stroke scales in the EMS are roughly 4 questions. And when you ask and answer those 4 questions and figure out who's got stroke per that or who should get a stroke alert, the sensitivity is roughly 50%. That's a good average across the country. So for every stroke alert that comes in, half of them are truly going to be strokes. If you take that and try to ask of those who truly are strokes and not mimics, which ones are large vessel occlusions, you need a better tool. And to do a better tool, it's going to have a lot more components. There are stroke scales being developed and studied that are asking simply this question. So when EMS picks up a stroke patient, do they have a large vessel occlusion? Because the question will be, and in many rural areas, this is extremely important. If we pick up a stroke patient and the closest hospital is a critical access center or a non-stroke center, and we would have to bypass that hospital to get to a comprehensive stroke center or to get to a hospital that has access to interventionalists and the capability of doing this, should we bypass the closer hospital? In the ideal world, if the patient has a large vessel occlusion and they're in the 24-hour window, yeah, you should bypass and go to the comprehensive stroke center. However, it's kind of hard to tell which patients have LVO. The second thing is, if you do bypass that closer hospital, you're losing that time to get TPA. So do we sacrifice the opportunity to get TPA to go on to mechanical thrombectomy? That question is still being looked at and really hasn't been answered yet. And the short answer is, there has been some data showing that depending on the radius and how many miles you have to go to get to the comprehensive stroke center, losing the opportunity or the time to get TPA is outweighed by the benefit of getting to a center where they can just take the clot out. That's early data, and we certainly don't have a definitive answer. But it's really important to think about this as we develop stroke systems, and even in urban areas where we're trying to decide which hospital to take the patient, but more importantly, in rural areas, how do you get patients to that comprehensive stroke center, and is it worth the resources necessary to do that?
Great. We've hit a little bit of the EMS controversies and discussion points, but now a patient arrives in the ED. A few years ago, all of our stroke protocols in the ED were focused on getting that non-contrast head CT, a quick interpretation for determination of whether patients are going to get systemic TPA, but I sense, and even in our center, some of the imaging protocols are changing. What are your thoughts on that, and perhaps do you have your own sort of pathway or protocol that you walk through how to determine non-contrast CTA versus a CTA versus a CT perfusion?
That's a great question. I get this question a lot, Mike, when I travel and lecture. A lot of people are feeling the pressure to do more imaging, and you and I and everybody listening know that more imaging is not always the right answer and it's not always better. So yeah, I've thought about this, and the algorithm that I like is patient comes in as a stroke alert, or the patient comes in with a stroke, ask yourself the question, do they have signs and symptoms of a large vessel occlusion? If they do, or irrespective, both patients are going to get a CT non-contrast right off the bat. And the reason you get that is to see if there's a bleed. So you're either in the ischemic stroke pathway or not. When you're thinking about that, if the patient has large vessel occlusion, which effectively means anterior large vessel occlusion, because that's what these studies were done on, they're going to have a higher NIH stroke scale. If they don't, if they have a low NIH stroke scale score, then you're going to get a CT. And if they're within the 4.5 hours, you'll consider whether or not to give them TPA. If the patient does have a large vessel occlusion, a high NIH stroke scale, you're going to get a CT, non-contrast. And if you are at the CT with the patient, which most of us do, go to the CT and we're looking for a bleed. If there's a bleed, you're kind of done. Call neurology, admit the patient, or neurosurgery. If there's no bleed, now you need to consider doing a CTA. And I would suggest with large vessel occlusion syndrome and the absence of blood on the CT non-con that you should get a CTA because you're looking for evidence of the proximal clot. So once you get that imaging, you're back into the ED, you're considering TPA, yes or no, depending on whether or not the patient qualifies for it and or wants it. And then you think about your timeline. If the patient is within 24 hours of last seen normal, then you want to consider CT perfusion or MR perfusion, DWI imaging per the dawn and diffuse criteria. So what that means is you got to get to know your radiology capabilities. You have to know, do I have CT perfusion capability? Do I have MRI capability? Can I get the patient to the MRI quickly? And what that takes is getting to know your neurointerventionalists, your radiologists, your neurologists, and find out what the capabilities are and what they can do. In our center, we had the availability of MRI acutely when the stroke patient came in. So every stroke alert gave us access to the MRI. But the first thing we would do is get a CT looking for blood. So I know that sounds a little bit complicated, but the short answer is if your patient has large vessel occlusion and they're within 24 hours, they should have some kind of perfusion imaging if you have capability of that, because it'll help to determine whether or not they'll benefit from thrombectomy.
Outstanding. Now, this may be a little bit too early since this is hot off the press, but a recent article, I think in New England Journal of Medicine, Evie, discussed the use of TPA for wake-up stroke. Any initial thoughts on that, as I'm sure our neurology colleagues are going to start advocating for this potential therapy in these patients?
Yeah, and it seems, doesn't it, like every time we turn around, we're pushing the envelope just a little bit further. Uh-huh. And I feel and sense a lot of angst in the EM community and a lot of talk about indication creep. Two separate issues. So if we can show effectively that TPA can be used in wake-up strokes, which I think with this advanced imaging, we can. The data have been good, that should be an option. However, I think we need to be really, really careful. If you look at the DAWN and DIFFUSE trials, the patients that would benefit from mechanical thrombectomy in the 6 to 24 hour window are not a large subset of what we see. We need to remember that it's a small subset. And when you look at the guidelines, the 2018 stroke guidelines, they're very clear about saying, if you're going to consider this, the patients that you consider it with should comply with the DAWN or DIFFUSE criteria. And, you know, we're the first line. Emergency medicine is the first line. And in a lot of cases, we are the voice of reason that says, wait a minute, should we really be giving TPA to this patient? They were in a trauma. We don't know if they've got some bleeding somewhere else. Or should we take this patient for mechanical thrombectomy? There's something else going on that might preclude that. And I think we need to hang on to that as emergency physicians and say, we look at the whole patient. We look at all the medical history. We look at the incidents, the HPI and everything that's going on. And we help to figure out if this is really a smart idea or not. We need to hang on to that because we do affect the outcome of these patients.
Well, Evie, this has been such a helpful discussion. Really appreciate you joining us once again here on the podcast. If you had to leave our listeners with two or three take-home pearls, what would those be?
So one of the first pearls is get to know your neurologists, your interventionalists, whether or not they're neurology, radiology, neurosurgery. Get to know them and see how they feel about these issues, see what their practice is, and that will make it easier for when you get that stroke patient in to pick up the phone and call and say, hey, I've got this patient. What do you think about that? And get a conversation going so that you know that you're all on the same wavelength. The second pearl is, I really do believe we are the front line for these patients and their families. And we need to tell the patients and the families what the options are, what the risks are, what the benefits are. And I think that we as emergency physicians are really good at connecting with patients in a short period of time, connecting with families, describing the medicine to them and the science to them, and helping to figure out if any of these interventions, whether it be TPA or mechanical thrombectomy, is a good idea for them. We help them make that decision without making the decision for them. And the third thing is something that I would say with any neurodisaster patient. If you have a patient that comes into the ED that has either a very large stroke or a bleed or TBI, please remember that we can't prognosticate in the first 24 hours. We've proven time and again that we're really bad at it. But we should be able to help families start thinking along the right line of thinking. And that is, what would the patient want if they could talk to us about what's going on? And not to prognosticate, but to say, listen, your family member has a pretty large stroke. We really don't know how they're going to do. We need to wait and give it time before we can prognosticate. But I want you to start thinking, if this doesn't go well, what would the patient want? Because that's what we want, and you know more than we do about what the patient would want. And so you start them thinking along those lines. And one more pearl I'd like to add is, please don't mention any procedures or surgery or anything to the family unless you know that your neurology, neurosurgery, radiology folks are going to offer that. Because if you set the family up thinking that there's an intervention that later, for some reason, is not offered, they're going to be very disappointed and confused, and very difficult for them to grapple with that.
Evie, thanks so much again for an outstanding discussion, really bringing us up to date where we're at in 2018 with acute ischemic stroke. For anybody who has any questions for Evie, please shoot us an email. We will send those questions over to her and get you a quick reply. And Evie, congrats once again on the move to Vermont. You got a lot of exciting things going on there with the creation of your neuro ICU, getting the fellowship started. Certainly, there's a number of folks listening in who have emailed about neurocritical care topics. Hopefully, they'll be interested in looking at your fellowship. And we're going to look to get you on in the coming months to talk about some more neurocritical care and emergency medicine topics and education. So my thanks once again for joining us this month.
Thanks, Mike. It's been my pleasure.
All right. That's going to do it for this podcast. Once again, this is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. For Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine, we will talk to you next month.